One of the fun things, one of the many fun things about being the president of the Triological Society is you get to look back and see what other giants actually held this position. And in perusing the Book of Presidents that was handed out at our centennial meeting, I came across this quote that Harold I. Lilly said during his presidential address back in 1939, where he stressed the individual contribution that members of our society could make. And he said, "Some contribute by presenting research, others by their clinical observations, some for refining surgical techniques, and others for their philosophical observation. A large group contributes simply by their attendance and attention at meeting." I think over the next couple of days, all of us will contribute in some fashion, just as Dr. Lilly has indicated. So many have contributed to our society that I thought it would be a useful exercise to see what scientific attributes our members and researchers should strive to maintain. So in researching this, I came across what other famous, successful researchers, philosophers, and inventors have said about this and kind of fused it with my own feelings and then selected a number of quotes that I thought were representative of their ideas. Their quotes are surprising, at least they were to me, and seem to be organized into motivation, the process, the methodology, imagination, intuition, luck, questioning and science, tenacity, ideas, and knowledge. And for the most part, I've tried to really develop this talk for the younger members in our audience this morning. So in addition to creating new knowledge, as Neil Armstrong said, and the excitement of doing research, there seems to be this almost mystical relationship that some famous researchers have indicated. So, for example, Louis Pasteur said, "I'm on the verge of mysteries, and the veil which covers them is getting thinner and thinner. The nights seem to me too long." In a similar vein, "The most beautiful thing we can experience is the mysterious. It is the source of all true art and all science. He to whom this emotion is a stranger, who can no longer pause to wonder and stand wrapped in awe, is as good as dead. His eyes are closed." Pretty heady words from Professor Einstein, I must admit. So what do famous researchers say about the process? You know, for many young people seem to think that the process is very formalized, with formal logic and formal reason. But as you read them, you realize that for the most part, they're just trying out new ideas and concepts. Albert Einstein: "If we knew what we were doing, it wouldn't be research." Another German scientist in a similar vein: "Basic research is what I am doing when I don't know what I am doing," by Wernher von Braun. And then Charles Kettering, I think, summed it up very nicely, saying, "Every honest researcher I know admits he's just a professional amateur. He's doing whatever he's doing for the first time. That makes him an amateur. He has sense enough to know that he's going to have a lot of trouble, so that makes him a professional." You know, the scientific method was a procedure developed in the 17th century, I know you all know, which involves careful observation, the development of hypotheses, and then the testing of those hypotheses by experimentation. Certainly the scientific method reigned supreme amongst famous researchers. For example, Richard Feynman said, "It doesn't matter how beautiful your theory is, it doesn't matter how smart you are, if it doesn't agree with experiment, it's wrong." You know, Feynman was the guy during the Challenger accident that actually took the O-ring and did an experiment. He put it in a glass of ice water and noticed that it became very brittle and shattered very easily. And again, Einstein: "No amount of experimentation can ever prove me right. A single experiment can prove me wrong." Certainly Einstein in his later years, you know, he was like a rock star when he was young. He was very well known and almost became a philosopher in his older age. Imagination, intuition, and luck. It's surprising to me how these humanistic, artistic, creative traits play such an important role in famous researchers and scientists. So, for example, inscribed above the Salk Institute is this phrase: "Hope lies in dreams, in imagination, and in the courage of those who dare to make dreams into reality." And John Dewey says, "Every great advance in science has issued from a new audacity of imagination." And Jonas Salk, in thinking about intuition, said, "Reason alone will not serve. Intuition alone can be improved by reason, but reason alone without intuition can easily lead the wrong way. They both are necessary." And then in speaking about luck, Louis Pasteur made the comment, "Somewhere between 33% and 50% of all scientific discoveries are estimated to have been stumbled upon rather than sought out. However, chance favors the prepared mind. In other words, you need to really immerse yourself in the science so that when that once-in-a-lifetime discovery comes along, you'll be ready to recognize it. I think Isaac Asimov said it in another way that's very interesting. The most exciting phrase to hear in science, the one that heralds the most discoveries, is not, "Eureka, I found it," but, "That's funny." Scientific research consists in seeing what everyone else has seen, but in thinking what no one else has thought. Questioning in science. Certainly, giants in our field recognize and pay homage to their predecessors. For instance, Sir Isaac Newton said, "Everything that I do is related to me standing on the shoulders of giants." Imagine a giant like him being able to say that. But in addition to that, questioning seems to be the foundation upon which progress seems to occur in science. So, for example, it is important that students bring a certain ragamuffin, barefoot irreverence to their studies. They are not here to worship what is known, but to question it, the ascent of man. Robert Heinlein, "Everything is theoretically impossible until it's done. One could write a history of science in reverse by assembling the solemn pronouncements of highest authority about what could not be done and could never happen." Clearly, questioning is central to the goal. Tenacity. You know, most of the famous researchers and scientists that I came across, once they set their mind on a goal, they could not be dissuaded. They just carried through until the end, no matter what they had to do. So, for example, Louis Pasteur, "Let me tell you the secret that has led me to my goal. My strength lies solely in my tenacity." Niels Bohr, "An expert is a person who has made all the mistakes that can be made in a very narrow field." And then finally, the famous phrase by Thomas Edison, "Genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration." Of course, Thomas Edison was quite a character. You know, they claim that he never really slept very much. He just used to take cat naps. Once when somebody asked him about lab rules, he said, "Lab rules? Hell, there ain't no rules around here. I'm trying to accomplish something." And somebody once asked him about results, and he said, "Results? I've got a lot of results. I know 1,000 things that won't work." Probably talking about the light bulb, I would imagine. Ideas. How many times has somebody come up to you and said, "I have this great idea. I have all these ideas," or, "You know, I thought of that first." In thinking about and seeing what others had said, Edison again, "Keep on the lookout for novel ideas that others have used successfully. Your idea has to be original only in its adaptation to the problem you're working on." And no less than Sir William Osler said, "In science, the credit goes to the man who convinces the world, not to the man to whom the idea first occurred." Ideas are a dime a dozen. Depends on what you do with those ideas, how you bring those ideas to fruition, that's important. And this is a long paragraph, and we're getting towards the end, but I did want to read it to you because I think it's from Sir Francis Crick. And it says, "By the time most scientists have reached the age of 30, they are trapped by their own expertise. They have invested so much effort in one particular field that it is often extremely difficult at that time in their careers to make a radical change. I, on the other hand, knew nothing except for basic training in somewhat old-fashioned physics and mathematics and an ability to turn my hand to new things. Since I essentially knew nothing, I had an almost completely free choice." Imagine the disciplines and the new domains that Francis Crick had to learn in order to become one of the world's first successful molecular geneticists. And I think every great scientist recognizes that even though he's looking at a very focused area, he needs to really explore a broad horizon in order to really come to successful conclusions. So based upon what I've presented this morning, here is my description of what scientific attributes should constitute a researcher and member of our society. The individual should enjoy the creation of new knowledge and appreciate the mysteries of life and joy of discoveries. He or she should be a staunch supporter of the scientific method, but should also understand that every researcher is a professional amateur and that the process of research is often fraught with blind alleys, incorrect ideas, and assumptions, and that ultimately hypothesis must be substantiated by experiments. A researcher must exhibit imagination and intuition tempered by tenacity and scientific questioning. And then finally, he or she should recognize that chance favors the prepared mind and should always be on the lookout for novel ideas framed by a comprehension of existing knowledge, not just in one domain, but across a broad horizon of disciplines. So thank you very much for your attention.